Chico Smoke Shop. Save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands, including a walk-in humidor. Visit Chico's inside or take advantage of the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week. You'll save up to 40% every day at Chico Smoke Shop.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. As always, I am Justin Spears with the Arizona Daily Star, and usually Dominic Bachaco, my co-host, is always with me recording basketball podcasts, but today, it is just myself and Bruce Pasco, beat writer, who covers Arizona Wildcats basketball. And since the college basketball or college football season is over with, we're going to be recording basketball podcast here at Frog and Firkin. Before every home game or home week, we're going to record a podcast live, usually on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, depending on when Sean Miller decides to schedule his press conference. So with me is Bruce Pasco making his Frog and Firkin debut. How's it going, Bruce?
Good. Good to be here.
Absolutely. So, Bruce, since we're here talking some college basketball, by the way, you can listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or you can download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. So, Bruce, Arizona, they're 7-3 right now in the non-conference slate. Is this about what you expected it to be? Considering, you know, you look at the trip to the Maui Invitational, I thought when you look back at that trip, they did what they were expected to do. They won the first game against Iowa State, which at the time looked like a pretty good win, but looking back on it, it looks like a pretty average win for Arizona. Then they lose to Gonzaga, Auburn, two decent losses. Then they obviously pick it back up. They beat UConn on the road, and then they beat Georgia Southern, Utah Valley, and those guys. Then on the road this past weekend, you were out there in Tuscaloosa. They had the lead late in the game, but they were just unable to pull it out. But here we are, 7-3. When you look and see this non-conference slate, how do you assess this, and is this what you expected it to be?
I think it's slightly better than I would have expected, but I had pretty low expectations for this team relative to what they normally are. I just think you can't lose your entire starting lineup and not recruit at a, not bring in another slew of five stars, which they weren't able to do this year. So I thought, you know, Iowa State, that was a toss-up game. I thought they could lose that, and I thought they certainly would lose both road games. They won one of them, and they stayed competitive in the other. And, you know, those weren't great teams they played, but they're tough trips to make. And especially at UConn, it was a pretty hostile environment. So it was impressive that they pulled that out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they've got a ways to go. But, you know, again, they're a completely retooled team. To be where they are at this point, and, you know, at least early on here, in position to be in a battle for the NCAA tournament is I think, about what they could expect.
Yeah.
The best they could expect.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have a story on Tucson.com in the Wildcaster apps. It was pretty much saying it's not a big deal. The big picture for Arizona, everything is still intact and everything is still in place. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, that's kind of what I was referring to. In that sense, I think, you know, they split two road games with basically almost a brand new team, and they're in pretty good position. They have a pretty favorable way to start the Pac-12 season. They could go winless. I mean, they could go without a loss for the next month. I mean, literally, you know, provided they get a couple things in order. So that it's really not that bad a place to be. I think the problem they're going to have to be, the problem is going to be, and we'll probably be talking to this all season, the Pac-12 is not doing well in the preseason, and that's setting the table for, it's going to be really tough to get bids out of this tournament. You're not going to get a lot of great wins out of the Pac-12 because, you know, teams are already pretty lowly rated. So Arizona's going to have to win a lot of games, but yeah, they're you know, again, they're in decent position.
Did they need a loss like they had against Alabama? Because I think this was perfect for them. It was a close loss in a true road environment. This is a Maui Invitational. It's not at a neutral site. It's where everybody in the stands are against them. And when they had a chance to win a game, they lost. They let it slip through the fingers when it was right there. And when you have a loss like this so early in the season in December, I think you learn a lot about your team. And I think when you look at Sean Miller, when he goes back and he looks back on the film and does the film session with, I don't know, whatever player is going to be next, I think he's going to look back and say, well, we did a lot of good things in this game, and which they did, I thought. I mean, although they got they were down by 19 points, they were able to come back. I don't know, Brandon Randolph started knocking down some shots. Brandon Williams started showing off a little bit of his scoring ability.
Yeah, no,
and they kind of grew up a little bit in just that game.
Right. Statistically, in many areas, they held their own in that game. They just didn't shoot well in spurts, and then they had some defensive breakdowns at the end and gave up some key second shots. And, you know, that's one of those things that probably could have gone either way if they make a stop here or there. And UConn kind of had a similar problem. Things weren't going well down the stretch, but they got to the line and hit a lot of free throws. So they pulled that one out. And, you know, as far as learning experiences, I think either way it probably wouldn't have been a learning experience. What you hope is probably for them is you don't lose confidence in that kind of situation. If you can pull out of it and say, we did that, we just needed that and work on that and get that corrected, yes, it can be a good thing. That's why they play them. I mean, it's interesting in this day and age of college basketball, not a lot of teams play two road games anymore because there's so many multi-team events and then these neutral games in LA or Chicago or whatever. And Sean Miller really looks to find these games because he knows that it's going to not only provide learning experiences but prepare them to go to Boulder, to go to you know, Eugene and some of these places they have to go in conference when you know, even more is going to be on the line. So so it was definitely a good learning experience. And the other thing I think that was interesting about that is the way he really tore into this team after Alabama. He wasn't sitting there saying, okay guys, we were close, you know, whatever, good try, or what. He ripped into this team. I mean, it was, you could hear his voice all the way down the hallway. And, you know, that's him trying to set a tone, saying, you know, this is not acceptable. We are going to learn from this, but you got to do better, and making clear what the standards are. And that's the way he does it. And, you know, we'll see how they respond.
And do you think him, you said, ripping into his team, when in the press conferences leading up to this game, he was like, oh, well, we're a lot better than people thought we were going to be. And is he getting to a point where, okay, we've already exceeded everybody's expectations, or we're much better than what people think we are, and now it's time to really hit into the fifth gear going into conference play?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because he qualified that earlier in the season by saying, we have a lot of guys who think they're better than other people think they are. We'll see. And even he kind of wasn't sure. Now then, and then after, I think he did make a comment like that they are better maybe, and so he seemed to get a little confidence. I don't know if there's much to read into that as much as I think he's trying to maximize the most what he can out of this team, and by, you know, by getting the message to them that you know, even a close loss like that is not acceptable, especially when you did some preventable breakdowns, and you know, he's setting the bar very high, and that's, you know, again, that's his style.
We'll get into some Baylor talk leading up, because I know they have a game against Baylor on Saturday, which is, they're getting a week off, a nice lengthy week off. Usually they always have a game on like that Wednesday or Tuesday or something like that, which is usually the norm for college
basketball.
Right.
Well, sometimes in December he'll take a week because of finals, you know, getting the guys finished up, although frankly I think some of the guys are already done. But you know, they do that. In fact, I'm looking at Baylor's schedule. They got 2 weeks off, you know, because they're finishing up over there. And that some coaches believe that's a good strategy. And it gives them time to not only finish up academics, but really work on things in practice. Because sometimes in November you have so many games hitting you, and you play those multi-team games where you're playing a few days, three games in 3 days or whatever. And you don't have time to sit back and say, wait, we need to work on our, you know, whatever, or transition defense or whatever. Now you have time to do that. I think both these teams do. So it'll be really interesting to see. Arizona's got 6 days to work on things. Baylor's had 2 weeks. We'll see who looks good on Saturday.
You know, well, you brought up, I'm going to go back to this whole, the Pac-12, the conference as a whole. Oregon had some pretty brutal losses to Texas Southern and Houston. USC has, they've kind of struggled here early on. UCLA has struggled. Pretty much the teams that we all thought were going to lead the pack, those three teams right there, Oregon, USC, UCLA, they have struggled. ASU has risen. What are they? They're still number 20 in the country, even though they suffered a loss to Nevada. But Nevada's a top 10 team. So you could look at that and say, well, that's actually a really good loss for ASU, considering they were competitive in that game.
Right, that's why they didn't fall in the rankings.
Exactly. So when you look at this conference, has there been a team that has surprised you? Or how do you look at this conference going into conference play now that non-conference schedule is almost wrapping up?
Yeah, I think the biggest surprise probably is Oregon. I mean, they've been in without Lewis King. They're one of their five-star freshmen, but you didn't quite see that coming where they'd struggle the way they have. However, that's a coaching staff that gets them, they tend to get that team better as the season goes on, and, it wouldn't surprise me if they still win the Pac-12, or they certainly are going to make a run for it. ASU's been a little bit of a surprise, but I think going into it, it was kind of the thought where they could be really good, but people didn't really know because they had some guys coming off transfer years. They had the Dort, the guard that there was a lot of buzz about, but you never really know until you see him out there and he does it. And they've been as good as can be expected, in fact, quite a bit better. But I think the question with them is, can they sustain it? I mean, last year we saw what they did early, and then it all started going downhill after they came here in early January, and people figured out how to play them, and maybe they lost a little confidence, and boom, they barely snuck into the tournament the way it turned out.
Who does Dort remind you of? He's a big guard. He's kind of like a combo between a two and a three, but he's really good at ball handling. He's just kind of like a, I'm not going to say a Swiss Army knife, because, of course, there are some things that he can't do, but for a guard, he seems to do a lot of different things. I'm trying to think. I've heard people compare him to Raleigh Alkins.
Well, certainly in stature, I think, and in physicalness, I think Dort seems like he's maybe a little more skilled on the perimeter, but Raleigh's a very good all-around player as well. I think that certainly if you're looking at U of A players, that's probably one that jumps to mind. I mean, maybe Stanley Johnson a little bit, but, Stanley was really, really skilled and, probably, we'll see, but maybe in that ballpark.
Mm-hmm. Who's the best player in the Pac-12 that you've seen so far? I know it's kind of early because you haven't really seen them go up against other Pac-12 teams, but even though that they've struggled, I would almost kind of put Bol Bol in that conversation, just because you've seen what he can do.
He can do things that everything. Nobody on the planet can do. there's just so that is that's one that jumps out at you for sure. I mean, it's a really good question. Dort's taking people by surprise. I mean, Jalen Wells playing well for Washington. I still think Chris Wilkes has been pretty solid, even though that team has struggled a little bit at UCLA.
Yeah. So, Bruce, we talk about Arizona basketball. I want to translate it over into the next level, talk some NBA. But you had a story that's on Tucson.com in the Wildcaster app about Alonzo Trier, and he's the guy that a lot of Arizona fans like to watch because he is one of the more recent Wildcats to enter the NBA. He was an undrafted player, and now he's thriving with the Knicks. Think about this, Bruce. Who are the most popular Arizona Wildcats in the NBA right now? I would say Alonzo Trier and TJ McConnell.
Yeah, I think it. It's hard to say, but I think the guys who stay here longer are more popular because people bond with them. They watch them for 2-3 years.
Yeah.
And then I think McConnell particularly, his personality was so out there. He was so appreciative. He made it clear he loved every minute he was here. I mean, how could you not like a guy like that? And the way he plays too. And he's doing that with the Sixers and been doing that for a number of years now. And so that's got to be up there. I think maybe, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson a little bit too. He was here a couple years anyway, and just his personality didn't quite come out at Arizona because of the way things are here. But he really, I think people like him out there. He's just kind of been on a team that's struggled. So, but I think it's interesting. Alonzo Trier, another guy who was here 3 years. People know him. They know everything he went through, all the tests and the sitting out and the broken wrist and or whatever his freshman year and all kinds of problems. I mean, he's kind of almost been a guy that that a lot of people want to pull for because of all he's been through, and then he goes out there and plays the way he plays, and his game obviously is translated really well to the NBA. And I think from what I've read, a lot of the Knicks fans just love him. I mean, they love the way he plays. They love the fact that he's kind of an underdog, and not drafted, and you know, there's been a lot of you've seen it, and I'm sure there's a lot of comments on Twitter and so forth that, you know, why have they not signed him yet? Well, they don't have to now, they do, but they didn't before. He was on a two-way deal.
But it's him, like I said, an undrafted guard. T.J. McConnell was an undrafted guard. A lot of people like those underdogs, guys that overcome the odds. And you've seen the Zona Zoo. A lot of guys, or a lot of fans in the Zona Zoo, they always wear NBA jerseys of former NBA players. I've seen a Lauri Markkanen jersey. I've seen a lot of T.J. McConnell jerseys. Yeah. And then courtside at the last game against Utah Valley, there was a fan wearing an Alonzo Trier jersey sitting courtside.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so cool that a guy like Alonzo Trier is really thriving in the NBA, because I'm going to be honest with you, I knew his game was fit for the NBA.
Yeah.
I just didn't know if he was talented enough to translate from college into the league, because he had a player like DeAndre Ayton on the same team, and yet they still couldn't figure it out to get past Buffalo in the first round of the tournament.
You are not the only one. A lot of NBA scouts thought exactly what you just said. I mean, that's, you know, I talked to one at UConn. He's in the area and was saying, "Were you surprised?" He's like, "Hey, I'm not going to lie to you. We were all surprised. You know, we just didn't think it would translate. There was a lot of questions about, and I've heard this from other sources too, that there was a lot of questions about the way Arizona played." And that speaks to what you said about with Ayton. And just the dynamic last year, they did very well in some ways, but there was something just didn't seem quite right chemistry-wise. And, you know, and also, and then there's basic X and O's things. I mean, he had less space to work with probably at Arizona than he does in New York, and that helps the way he plays as well. But, yeah, I think there was a little bit of surprise. And then, and maybe in some factor, the whole PED thing he went through, I don't think the NBA execs were particularly concerned about that, because I think everybody knew the story and he was trying to come back or, you know, whatever. And but just the whole sum of it was like, yeah, do we really want to spend a draft pick on this guy? I don't know. I mean, and you know, according to Trier, there were some teams who were willing to draft him late if he agreed to certain conditions, but he didn't want to do that, and he wanted to go to the Knicks. So, and that is true, and that sometimes gets overlooked in the NBA draft. Sometimes guys are so desperate to get their names called, they'll make a deal with a team to, you know,
they'll settle.
Yeah, they'll settle basically, and that can hurt you long term. So if that's true, and I don't have any reason to think it's not, you know, he made a really wise decision there.
Yeah, I've never heard that before. And when he told me that in Las Vegas for NBA Summer League, I thought to myself, all right, I don't know. But see, I have that mindset. It's just, if I'm going to get drafted, I'm going to go to any team that's willing to take a chance on me. It doesn't matter what team it is. And he told me, you know, there were some teams that were thinking about drafting me in the second round. The Knicks thought about drafting me, but they wanted to go with a guy like Mitchell Robinson, and rightfully so, because he's one of the best young bigs in the draft.
Right, and I think there's a perception too that, you know, off guards are kind of a dime a dozen. They're 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", guys. They're everywhere, but he's really, really special in what he can do, the way he can score, and you know, I think all the factors again combined made it really tough for them to justify a pick, especially like you said, they have a chance to get some size. The same thing with Ayton over Luka Doncic. You got to go with size, because you don't want to just miss. You know, even if Ayton doesn't quite pan out, it's there's so much upside with him. They had to do it.
Mm-hmm. Even though Luka is looking
well as
good
of right now, you might want to think, you know, maybe it doesn't look so good right now, but in 3 years from now, it could be totally different.
Absolutely, but Trier in his contract, he's still on a two-way deal with the Knicks, so technically he's a G Leaguer, or he should be playing for the Westchester Knicks, but he hasn't played a single second, or he has never worn a Westchester Knicks uniform.
Right.
And time is ticking, Bruce. We got till the end of this week for the Knicks to make a decision. Well, do they want to keep him on the two-way deal? Because he had 45 days with the NBA team, right? And he's done that with the Knicks, so you kind of think, he's going to get a standard NBA contract here by, I don't know, before the weekend.
It's really interesting. I mean, they have three options. Yeah, they can keep him on a two-way contract, but because his time is up, you can spend a maximum of 45 days of practice and game time. That's already going to be up, I think, Friday, they estimated. So that, if they keep him on that, they have to send him to Westchester, and I'm sure David Fistel is not going to put up with that, and they want him there. That's not an option. So their other two options are to sign him to a standard rookie contract, which is, I think, around $800,000 pay in that. But he can become a restricted free agent at the end of the season if they do that. And if he keeps playing the way he is, he's going to have a lot of leverage. So that could be a little bit risky on the team's part. The other option is for the Knicks they have some exception money, I think, a few million, and they could try and lock him up for a few years, which is, maybe the way to go. It'd be really interesting to see if they do that. It certainly would show you what they think of him if they do that, if they give him, a couple million for 2 years and guarantee it. That's a real statement. Mm-hmm.
I also had the chance to talk about Alonzo Trier with former Arizona assistant Book Richardson, because I bumped into him at Hoop Hall West, which is a national basketball showcase, a lot of big-time high schools. This was a little bit different than what most people that cover these events are used to. I know you've covered several AAU tournaments, which that is a little bit different. Have you covered one where there's high school teams that come in as opposed to AAU teams?
Right. During the season, if I'm in position to go and there's something going on nearby, yes, I'll go. They're slightly different, but a lot of them now, especially you got this with Spire Academy or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them, they're almost like AAU teams, really. They're teams that were created around a school or schools that were created around a team, however you want to look at it, in a lot of cases, and they're concentrated. So you have a lot of really good prospects on them, so the level of play is almost as good as, say, in some cases, say, EYBL or something like that. So, there's a Les Schwab Invitational in Portland. I went up there 1 year when I happened to be in nearby, because Oregon, they're playing Oregon State the next day. And in LA, I've seen a couple of deals like that as well, and sometimes in Phoenix, it just didn't work this weekend because they were going to Alabama.
Yeah, but it was a hell of an environment because
it's interesting.
I've never seen
a whole different deal.
I've never seen anything like it before. Yeah. Just that one game because LeVar Ball strutting in, everybody clapping and taking out their phones and giving him an ovation. It was just. Pandemonium inside of a high school.
Was there anybody
gym.
Booing LeVar?
They were all.
That's wild. Yeah,
they were all clapping and cheering and all had smiles on their face. And as I'm taking a video of LeVar Ball, I notice, wait, that's Book Richardson sitting three rows behind him, and then maybe a couple rows over, Ron Artest, who goes by Meta World Peace now, he was there because his son plays for Bella Vista Prep, which is the same team that Arizona signee Terry Armstrong plays for. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah.
At that game Friday night between Spire and Bella Vista Prep, it was LaMelo Ball and Terry Armstrong. I'd never seen anything like that before.
It's nuts. And there was one last summer in Vegas. For some reason, they put it in an auxiliary gym, so it was small, but it was LeBron James is Bron or
Bronny.
Bronny, yeah, and whatever. And that game was just nuts. You couldn't even get in the door. People were literally. I mean, it was like going to a rock concert or something. I mean, people were pushing and shoving, trying to get in there, just get a glimpse of LeBron. And LeBron was trying to just be a regular dad, but he can't. He's not a regular dad, so. People were just going nuts about that. And there is for big matchups, you get a lot of hype like that. Mm-hmm. And It's something else. It's not like regular high school ball. It's not like even really like college. It's just its own like thing.
It's its own beast.
Right. this hype filled recruiting world. Mm-hmm.
So Bruce, since we only have a few minutes left here, let's talk some Arizona Baylor. I don't know how much you've seen out of the Bears this year, but coming out of the Big 12, I feel like they reached a peak a few years ago or a couple years ago. They were always nationally ranked, one of the best teams in the Big 12. Of course, they still got to go through Kansas, and when the road goes through the Kansas Jayhawks in the Big 12, it's almost impossible to win the conference. But Baylor's still a notable opponent for Arizona's non-conference slate. Think about the big names that Arizona's playing this year, not in the Pac-12, Maui Invitational, and then you got UConn, Alabama, and Baylor. But it's at home. Arizona, 87-3 since 13-14. I think this is going to be another win at home for the Wildcats. Baylor should test them.
Yeah, I mean, it should be, but these last three games before Christmas, they're all games that Arizona's going to have to be on guard for. I mean, these UC Davis, Montana are decent mid-major teams as well, and Baylor, you know, Baylor's kind of retrenching a little bit. I think they lost a lot of starters, and they actually had a lot of injury problems last year, so they were an NIT team basically, but you know, Scott Drew's a pretty well-respected coach. They've got they got some guys back. They brought in a grad transfer, and they're getting it done. They have three losses, and only one of them was really a bad loss, and that was Texas Southern at home to begin the season. But they lost at Wichita State, you know, which is
Who hasn't lost Wichita State?
No shame in that. Yeah, and then I think Ole Miss in a tournament somewhere. So they'll be decent. It's hard to bring in, again, in this day and age, it's hard to bring in, good home-and-home opponents, and this is about as good as they've been able to get, and they're pretty successful getting home-and-homes with some teams in Texas, and that they've managed to be pretty good series over the years. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like you can go out and get Duke or Kansas to come into your home court. It just doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-hmm. When I look at Baylor and the players that could present a challenge for the Wildcats this year, think of one guy. And that is forward Tristan Clark, who's about 6'9", 240 pounds. He's built. And while Chase Jeter is taller than him, Tristan Clark has 24 blocks so far this season. And I'm looking at the stat sheet. The next closest bear in the blocks category is Mark Vitell, who has 9 blocks.
Yeah.
So this guy has 15 more blocks than the second man behind him. Tristan Clark is going to be a challenge down low in the post for Arizona.
Yeah.
I think Chase Jeter is going to have his work cut out for him.
His block percentage is unreal. 12.7% of possessions he guards, he blocks the shot. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And shoots 77% from two. So,
yeah,
it'd be really interesting. You're right. And they'll probably have to rotate guys on him and get Ira Lee to push him around a little bit. And, you know, because those physical guys are challenging. And, you know, we'll see. Maybe Ryan Luther in spot, but I think it'll be Jeter and Lee a lot.
What is Ira Lee's role with Arizona? When Zeke Nagy committed to Arizona, I thought, okay, well, Ryan Luther is going to be gone next season. That was before they made the transition to put Acott at power forward. And I really thought Ira Lee was going to be Arizona's starting power forward next season, but I haven't seen that jump from his freshman year to sophomore year, because every time he gets in a game, it's like 10 seconds in, he already commits a foul.
Yeah.
I don't know what his role is. I don't know what he's going to do.
Well, still, you know, I think they're still looking forward to evolve. I think he really is defensively and screening, and he's that one guy who, you know, and he really goes hard at you, and he can throw his weight around a little bit. He's strong, you know, pretty skilled, but I think for the most part, I think defensively is what they're looking for from him at the most part. But they're struggling. I mean, both are, you know, he's been probably not as productive offensively as they would have liked. I think in the front court in general, it's been a tough deal, as we knew going into the season. It's, you know, they were going to have to get by, and you know, Jeter's been better than expected, and he's been healthy except for that ankle issue early on, so that's that's been a plus. But Lee, probably they're probably looking for more from him, and you know, Ryan Luther, we've seen, has been an ongoing battle with his confidence and his finger, and you know, what can they get from him?
Mm-hmm. So 9 p.m. tip off Saturday against Baylor, Bruce. I hope you have your coffee ready.
Yeah,
it's a late tip off.
No, late ones are good, because I tell you what, in Alabama, the game started at noon. I didn't leave the arena till 7 o'clock or something, and so yeah, it was 7 p.m. So at least it's at night. It's like, you know, there's a deadline and then you're done. So
yeah,
and maybe some cleanup stuff afterwards and all that. But you know, the more time you have, sometimes there's too much time, and night games like that really keep you focused.
Absolutely,
as a writer as well as I'm sure the players.
Absolutely. Well, again, Arizona, they take on Baylor this Saturday at McHale Center. Tip-off set for 9 p.m. You can watch it on ESPN2, or you can follow all of our live coverage on the Wildcaster app, available on the App Store and Google Play. Special thanks to Frog and Firkin for hosting yet another live podcast. We'll be continuing these pods throughout the season before every home game. We'll be back next week, next Tuesday, as the Arizona Wildcats get ready to take on the Montana Grizzlies. That will do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. For Bruce, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
All right.
Smoke Shop. Save up to 40% on all products with no city or state sales tax. Over 100 brands, including a walk-in humidor. Visit Chico's inside or take advantage of the drive-thru. Open 7 days a week. You'll save up to 40% every day at Chico's Smoke Shop.